Thank you for listening to a reading presented by the Poetry Center of Chicago. The Poetry Center is an independent, nonprofit arts organization promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. To learn more about the Poetry Center, to read poems by our students in Chicago Public Schools, or to donate, please visit www.poetrycenter.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Mark Perlberg. I'm president of the Poetry Center. And I'm here to tell you a little bit about the center and to introduce the man who will chair our wonderful John Cage celebration. Now in its 18th season, the Poetry Center at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago is the longest running reading series ever held in this city. Its purpose is to provide a forum in a downtown location accessible to everyone, where writers of excellence can read their work before the general public and interact with that public. With the assistance of the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and from time to time of the Art Institute itself, as in today's program, the center has presented approximately 150 readings of high quality. Among those who have read for us are three Nobel Prize winners, Saul Bellow, Joseph Brodsky, and the great Polish poet Czesław Miłosz, who read in this auditorium in 1989. Besides presenting writers of major reputation, and the list is long, it includes people like John Ashbery, Gwendolyn Brooks, Tess Gallagher, Galway Connell, John Cheever, and Stephen Spender, the Poetry Center also promotes younger writers who ought to have wider exposure and appreciation. It's now my pleasant task to introduce to you the noted composer, Peter Gina. Mr. Gina is associate professor at the School of the Art Institute and chairperson of the Department of Time Arts. He has known John Cage for 20 years and has written extensively about him. In a few moments, he will introduce Mr. Cage to you. Peter Gina's compositions in various media, instrumental, electronic, and computer-generated music, have been performed throughout the United States, Canada, Europe, and Australia. Recently, his work was performed at Lincoln Center in New Music America and at the San Paolo Biennale. Also, he has produced, directed, and performed in many new music and multimedia events right here in Chicago. His publications include Freedom in Experimental Music, The New York Revolution, and A John Cage Reader. Most recently, he contributed the essay accompanying exhibitions now on view at the Museum of Contemporary Art, one of which is called John Cage, Scores from the Early 1950s. Peter Gina, it is a great pleasure to welcome you to the Poetry Center's John Cage celebration. Peter?
Thank you. And Mark and I only met 15 minutes ago. Thank you, Mark. It is, needless to say, a great personal pleasure for me to welcome John Cage again to this very space for the second time in less than 4 years. And it's altogether fitting that the Chicago area should offer a week-long presentation of his work in celebration of his 80th year. He was here 10 years ago for a week when honored with a music festival for his 70th birthday, and he has visited us many times in between. Some of you may even remember the year John spent in Chicago from 1941 to 1942, leaving for New York just before his 30th birthday. Here he taught music at Moholy Nagy School of Design, accompanied Catherine Manning's modern dance classes at the University of Chicago, and gave a concert at the Arts Club. I feel that I can say with certainty that we will see him again in Chicago during his 90th year, as well as many times in between. The first time I saw John Cage was during the 60s, while I was a student at the University of Buffalo. John, as well as most experimental figures of the avant-garde, was often a guest of the music department there. I remember the first glance that I took from a half-open door during a rehearsal break. He was sitting in a room filled with smoke, of which he was the major source. He sported his characteristic crew cut and was dressed as usual in a sport coat with a meticulous white shirt and a tightly knotted thin necktie. I was too awestruck and intimidated to enter. And besides, to John, no doubt, I simply would have been just another composer with a four-letter name. It was in the early 70s when I first spent a few days with John. Excuse me. We had brought him to the California State University at Fresno, where I was teaching. He lectured on Duchamp, then read from Empty Words in between performances of the Etudes Australes. I remember going with some colleagues to pick him up at Norman O'Brown's home in Aptos. As soon as we appeared in the patio, John leapt from a chess game that he was playing with Brown and greeted us like we were old friends. I understood immediately what my friend and mentor Morton Feldman meant when he used to say that John Cage had given all of the artists of the 50s in New York permission to move ahead with their ideas. I could feel that energy exuding from John's presence. I often wondered, though, if he jumped so eagerly up from that chessboard because perhaps he was badly losing the match to Norman O'Brown. On the return trip across California to Fresno, and during the ensuing few days, I could easily see that while my sense of intimidation from those appearances at Buffalo were totally unfounded, my initial feelings of awe, in fact, had been grossly understated. In the 20 or so years since Fresno, and many meetings since, that awe continues to grow, much like his amazing output of wonderful music, prose, prints, watercolors, stories, and ideas. With such innovative work dedicated to both non-intention and lifelong discipline, John has at once opened the door for creativity among artists while slamming it shut on opportunities for originality. It seems he's thought of and done everything, and without being trendy, I might add. We all can thank him for that. Now we younger artists can explore ideas without tying our nerves into knots, worrying about being original. I had an incident recently where I just finished a computer-generated piece that uses real-time choices, probability choices, and the material that is to be generated, that generates the actual piece, is to be from each city that the piece is played in. So I had this great idea that the title would take on the name of the city it was in. Well, about a week later, when I started working on the exhibit at the gallery at the Museum of Contemporary Art, and looking at some of John's scores, I realized that 40 years earlier he had done exactly the same thing with water music, choosing the title to go with the place. So anyway, thanks, John. Now at least I don't have to aggravate. We, your fans and colleagues, are free to get on with the work at hand. Please join me in welcoming John Cage to this reading, the first event in a week-long celebration of his overflowing creativity. John Cage.
I'm going to read two texts today, and the first one is very short. It's called Introduction to the First Meeting of the Satie Society. And strangely enough, I must introduce the introduction. It was some 7 years ago that I was in Cologne in Germany, and I was invited to give a talk about Satie at a festival that would be several months thence. And I explained that my lecture wouldn't be informative. And they said, "We know that. That's why we're asking you to give it." I then gave the lecture, which was, you will hear about it in the actual introduction. It consists of seven different texts written as masastics, I'll explain that in a moment, on source material belonging to the each one belonging to a different person, so that there's the source text, for instance, in one case is the essay on the duty of civil disobedience of Thoreau, and the text itself is considered to be a present given to Eric Satie to celebrate at this first meeting. when I finished writing the text, there's seven presents, I thought that instead of its being printed as a book, that it should be one should be able to access it by means of a computer, that it would be published instead of on paper, that it would be published electronically. And I arranged that with a place in an electronic place in California called The Well. As far as I know, it's still available. After I arranged that, a very few days afterward, there was a telephone call, and I was asked whether I had a book that would be available for publication. And I said, well, I just published the one that I have electronically. And the voice on the other end of the line said, that doesn't matter. We would like to publish it anyway. And they turned out to be the limited editions. And since that time, it's about 7 years ago, the limited editions has changed, in my case, to Osiris edition. And the plan to publish the first meeting of the Sati Society has become very elaborate. Each of the presents is accompanied by graphic work, either by Jasper Johns, by Robert Rauschenberg, by Saul LeWitt, by Robert Ryman. And there won't be very many copies, so that it won't, in fact, be practical for a single individual to own it, because in that case, very few people would see it. It will belong probably to museums or organizations. I want to show you what a misostic is now. In the case of this introduction to the first meeting of the Sati Society, those words, the first meeting of the Sati Society, go down the middle of the poem, instead of going down the edge as they would if it were an acrostic. But this is a mesostic going down the middle. And the rule that I follow is that the letter, the middle letter, or the letter of the string, does not occur, the second one doesn't occur between the first and the second until its appearance in the second word, and then the third doesn't appear between the second and the third until the third, so that here we have the first word, the first meeting, the word is the. Originally it, that's the T of the. Originally it was a lecture to bring about thoughts, that's the H of the. Originally it was a lecture to bring about thoughts that were, that's the E of the. Originally it was a lecture to bring about thoughts that were not in our heads. Not about the French composer, that's the F of first. Originally it was a lecture to bring about thoughts that were not in our heads. Not about the French composer, Eric Satie. That's the I of first. But to celebrate, that's the R of first. His life, his work, the S is the S of first. As though it were always his birthday. That's the T. I think that's enough to let you get through this with some understanding of what's being said. Originally, it was a lecture to bring about thoughts that were not in our heads, not about the French composer Eric Satie, but to celebrate his life, his work, as though it were always his birthday, using the titles of his music, the initials and words of his name, to write misostics, poems read down the middle, or as usual, from side to side, to give them to him for no reason, just for his seeing and for his hearing, his enjoyment of being alive now that he's dead. To use the writings of others as source material for these misostics. Joyce, McLuhan, for instance, Duchamp, Thoreau, Chris Mann, myself, and the Bible, a mixture of lovers, completely imaginary. That was my idea. Now it has become a coming together of artists, Jasper Johns, Robert Ryman, Robert Rauschenberg, Sol LeWitt, Mel Daniel, sketches by the Man of Concord, drawn again by Bastian, paper made with Satie memorabilia printed on it, printed again with fire, with smoke, all of these presents collected in a valise of shattered glass, its metal frame embossed with sentences he wrote or remarks he's said to have made. A first meeting, like every meeting with Satie, is the beginning of the change, a changed attitude toward life, toward art, toward work, toward music, the removal of boundaries wherever they exist, never ending the coming together of opposites. Show me something new, and I'll start all over again, living with interior immobility, enjoyment in the midst of countlessness, accomplishing nothing as though nothing had happened, as though tourist, living as though tourist. Now I'm going to read some other misostics which are on the string overpopulation and art. Again, those words go down the middle, and there are altogether 20 letters in the string, and there are 40 stanzas, you might say, in what I'm going to read. About 1948 or 50, the number of people living all at once equaled the number who had ever lived at any time, all added together. The present, as far as numbers go, became equal to the past. We are now in the future. It is something else. Has it doubled? Has it quadrupled? All we now know for sure is the dead are in the minority. They are outnumbered by us who are living. What does this do to our way of communicating? Mails rarely from people we know. I spend time saving it to send it to Wesleyan, Northwestern, or Santa Cruz. For fungi and arts, a picture's thus given of this moment in history. Ephemera give it. Rest of the mail's bureaucratic fundraising by institutions concerned with health and environment, human rights, etc. 3 copies of the same document, contribution requests, bureaucratic inefficiency glaringly exhibited, all thrown away, triplicate stamped envelopes included. Phone rings, reviving practice, whether sentient or non-sentient, practice of Buddhism, the general outlines of. Every being, including the telephone, is the Buddha, is world-honored, is answered, is the, is of, is emptiness, fullness, all of creation, endless interpenetration, together with non-obstruction. Of what avail, then, the use of answering service, attempt to free oneself from interruption? Solitude for just a moment regained is utterly, finally lost. Finding 19th, not 21st, in 20th century. Are you into fax and electronic mail? Are you in touch? HCE. We live in glass houses, our vitric surroundings transparent, reflective, putting images outside in space of what's inside our homes. Everything's as multiplied as we are. Each moment is magic. We have no idea what's being seen or heard. The quantity is beyond count. The quality is ready-made art. This demonstrates validity of those works of art in which no place is more important than another. Beauty at all points. If it doesn't click, Wittgenstein, take a clicker from your pocket and click it. Transform your perception of it, of whatever, no matter what the name, what the artist's name. No need for balance, harmony, contrast, climax. In this situation, what's the artist's proper behavior? Self-expression? Or should he put himself aside, so to speak, change himself, asking questions instead of following laws or making an attempt after breaking them to establish yet another or others? Getting rid of the principles of law, of control, increasing world and life enjoyment seems more radical. Removal of the likes and dislikes. Chance operations. Wanting to get a taxi, avoiding a gentleman on the corner who was there ahead of me, I separated my problem from his by going to the opposite side of the street. Just as I hailed an empty cab, I was surprised. The gentleman rushed ahead of me and actually got in the cab without even a remark. I don't know whether he happened to see, but another cab picked me up before he was out of sight. What are some of the various eventualities in a changed society? No government, keeping education in first place, keeping it, that is, for you to give to yourself, increase of unemployment until we are all self-employed, self-taught, self-governed, a way not just to say anarchy, but to do it. Forget the politicians. They are on the moon. When they saw we were no longer voting, they left, not bothering with money, preferring credit, credits electronic. No person need be without it. But who'll do all the work? Those who do will have pleasure seeing their work actually carried out. Robots making robots. We have the next war mapped out for us to make the world safe for poverty. Violation. Violation of laws made to protect the rich. While there's still government, pass laws based on the needs of the poor. Give them shelter, squatting privileges. Change the economic structure of society out of profit and ownership into use. The police walled up the doors and windows. The house is again not used. And the people are still homeless. Mayor said, evict the squat. The police did it brutally. A house was empty. We restored it, filled space with life, concerts, discussions, people's kitchen, libraries. Nobody gets money for her or his work. A non-profit basis, changes of behavior, discussions about sex, overcoming repressive structures, having no need for art. Pleased with what I see. Pleased with what I hear. Surrounded by multiplicity. He said he could imagine a world without art and that it wasn't bad. Artlessness. The sound of traffic. An instance of silence. The sound of traffic. The sound of traffic, an instance of silence. Phone rings, reviving practice of Christianity. Split the stick, split the stick, and there is Jesus, walking on the walking, on the writing, on the water, as though nothing happened. The snow, the white animal, asleep, safely asleep in the tree. No traces left. Reviving practice, whether meditation or non-meditation. Pleased or displeased, won't burn. The metal ones won't burn. Is a, is the, is of. Is emptiness fullness, practicality, all creation, endless interpenetration, whispered truths, the necessity to find new forms of living together, to stop the estrangement between us, to overcome the patriarchal thinking, the authoritarian structures, and the coldness, human not togetherness, the necessity to develop a culture that consciously opposes the ruling culture, a culture which we create, we determine, which overcomes the passive consumer's attitudes, and which is not ruled by profiteering. Aesthetic spirit is as though visibility would not help, as though everything that is generally understood must stop. Only what one person alone understands helps all of us. How? What is not understood, a mystery, is now necessary. Something we don't, of which we can't, make head or tail, a music of variations without repetitions, an introduction to pleasure that has no need for proof or ideas or feelings, goal without goal. And what did I hear or see? I can't be sure. It was as if there was nothing on which to depend, as if there was nothing. But in the presence of Nikša Glico wrote from Zagreb to say, the ugly Yugoslavian war is not between people. It has been brought about by that part of government and army that's concerned with Serbian power. Let our friends and all others know the truth. This is not ethnic nor civil war, nor different ways of thinking. This is an imperialist political aggression. It's all happening in the heart of Europe at the end of the 20th century, possibly bringing about the total disappearance of Croatian state and people. What did you hear? The Pentagon giving up on the radio. Soldiers not to be paid, just discharged. 700,000, a great boon for unemployment. Do you think we'll finally see unemployment's what we've been working toward? Unemployment's self-employment. At last, we may be doing what we, the human race, could be doing, all of us. As he said, Suzuki said, there seems to be a tendency toward the good. Even though the future is already here, many are still living in the past. All governments are striking examples of what's out of date and inappropriate to our proper business, our evolution. Though there are more of us, all of us live in the same place, the planet Earth. There is no difference between what happens to some of us and what happens to the others. Whatever happens, happens to all of us. Our problems are not various. They are identical. The purifying of water and air, the provision of nourishing food, the delivery of it to places where it is needed or just desired, the providing of shelter, the availability of energy wherever it is needed. We have these problems in common. We can solve them all best without thinking of the division of the world into 153 separate nations. Their separate powers, mortally destructive. Our Buckminster Fuller called it killing me, as opposed to living we. Fuller is dead, but his spirit is now more than ever the spirit the world needs. It is alive. We have it in his work, his writings. Let us not forget, we are now having to continue his work. In music, the absence of conductor, score, and bar line. Spaceship Earth, human needs, and world resources, the two kept in balance, finding changing solutions for changing problems. The world game, teenagers, Fuller showed, can play it. In other words, intelligence is needed instead of politics, or lawyers, or even the United Nations. So, what's future's future? First, the world's prime vital problem is how to multiply by 3 swiftly, safely, and satisfyingly per pound, kilowatt, and man-hour the overall performance realizations of the world's comprehensive resources. This will render those resources able to support 100% of humanity's increasing populace at levels of physical living far above whatever has been known or imagined. To satisfy the physical will bring us also undreamed of metaphysical capabilities. Next, instead of ownership, individual 24-hour use of facilities, cars, cycles, paintings, hotels, telephones, museums, hospitals, libraries, restaurants, multiplying of value by time, if house is locked, honoring its use, later when house is free, opening a door with one of those flat computer-made keys, its time validity changed. And then, stopping the removal of fossil fuels from the earth, developing solar energy, developing pneumatic power, effects of light, air, etc., reserving oil and gas for a time when their use is needed in connection with the initiation of a future technique. Third, along with the removal of nations, the removal of schools, Ivan Illich's de-schooling society, putting the process of learning in the hands of the person who is doing it, computer facilities and ways to contact others, old or young, who share your interests, studios for every kind of art or research. In a word, utopia. We have only to make it work for every last one of us. We begin by believing it can be done, getting rid of pessimism, blindly clinging to optimism, in no sense doubting the possibility of utopia, but simply wanting to know the details of how it will happen. How does it begin? And where? It will not happen politically. Fuller says it will arise due to mankind's vast wealth, industrial wealth, the tool-organized capability to take energies of the universe, which are transforming their patternings in various ways, as yet uncontrolled by man, so that they go through channels onto the ends of circularly arranged levers, which man invents, so that the energy turns wheels and shafts to do all the work. Universal energy is inexhaustible. Our knowledge only increases, as does our common wealth. In order to bring about continuous elevation of human dignity, we will be able to afford to give everyone student fellowships in any subjects they elect. Fuller's education automation. Everyone's going to study whatever he pleases. Man's not needed because of his ability to work as a slave. He's needed because of his ability to consume. The Chinese now have the most consumers. They'll eventually produce at the lowest prices. With that competition, we're going to be forced to go into total automation. Full unemployment, only to find ourselves amazingly successful. Wealth automated. Industries now whirled around. Picture of man that's now visibly developing is world man. World citizenship will not occur as a political initiative. It will be required by the economics of an exploding industrial world required for its personnel, if everybody who teaches school, because it's the simplest way of making a living, were given a well-funded fellowship to a lifelong research, would they accept? Would they not stop asking, how can I make a living? And start asking, what is it that I love, that I'm interested in? What could I do to help make the world work to some more satisfactory, more interesting point? This used to be a stupid question. It suddenly becomes a very logical one. In 1927, Fuller gave up forever the general dictum of society, that is, that everyone to survive must make a living. He substituted the individual's anti-entropic responsibility and universe. Fuller sought, as an individual, for the tasks needed to be done no one else was doing or attempting to do, which, if done, would physically and economically help society to eliminate pain. As a consequence, it was necessary for him to discipline his imaginings, invent and develop technical and scientific capabilities, innovative problem solutions, synergetics. He found design strategy for universe, humanity, children advantaging the new life, the new intelligence, doing more with less, ephemeralization. Fuller's revolution is his plan to change not man, but man's environment. Basque friend Esther Ferrer replied by fax, I knew her as artist anarchist. I had asked about anarchy's future. Anarchy will always have a future and a present, she wrote, because it's associated with creativity. I don't mean art, which is something else. I talk of creativity in the sense that it comes from rejoicing, from pleasure, serving first of all the person who practices it, unconditioned by obligations to anyone else. There is no master except oneself. Anarchy, like creativity, is thus a completely gratuitous choice which engages only yourself and which you decide to practice. One could well define anarchy as a practice of liberty. One can practice it without others being at all interested. It does not take away from one's own joy. That is, anarchistic thought is something out of time, even without time. I would even dare to say something anchored in human nature. There are other things anchored in human nature, unfortunately. And like creativity, individualistic and individualized, this is the source of its attractiveness and enormous risk. It is particularly attractive in periods as today of loss of spirit, loss of hope. There isn't or doesn't seem to be messianic hope to stuff our heads with. There is a return to essential things, never far away, because we can find them inside ourselves. Without needing recourse to ideologists or master thinkers, without needing to think outside ourselves, our liberty is limited only by the consideration we give others as beings who also practice liberty. Anarchy is quite simply a problem of assuming individual responsibility. It is the idea that each person conceive of himself as an intelligent being, capable of making his life decisions without delegating his decision-making capacities to someone else, whether a god, king, state, party, ingenious artist, master of thought, mother or father. Esther says, after all, anarchy really does have the future people are talking about. It is creative conduct as opposed to subordinate conduct. It is positive individualism to follow a way of thinking that proposes you can assume for your own acts responsibility, visibly responsible, first to yourself and then to society. After the unworkability of capitalism, Marxism, authoritarian socialism, anarchy seems for man's liberation to be a possibility once again. As Jorge Oreiza said to me, from failure to failure, right up to the final victory. I think now of Marshall McLuhan. The world has become a single mind. We have extended the central nervous system, electronics. Our technology makes the revolution for us. We can change our minds. We share only one, the planet. The planet has become a single person. It is a question of rolling off a log. Conduct, creative. Conduct from failure to failure. Anarchy. It promises nothing. Mind, up to the final victory. Creative mind.